Blog Talk Radio.
Let's go. Yeah. Ghetto children singing. See, what up? They eager to learn how to become the next world leaders. Brave hearts. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off it. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off it. Book one, strategy, tactics, techniques. Look dumb, but massively notice the weakness in all them. Gotta use it only if necessary. Homie, investors is very real if enemies carrying heavy steel. Beware the thugs who ain't scared of blood or jail time. When Aryan nations ain't having integration, we so blind to beauty of life. But when my mom said, again, you could be Christ, I wasn't old enough to hold my d***ing P-right. Jesus, what is he like? I picture him standing with diamonds on him, little different from the way my mommy saw him. Practice your aiming, physical training in difficult terraining. Test your endurance, try to keep your stamina banging. Splitting duchess up, strap up, the armies of school, teaching smart ways to go. I'm thinking Gandhi was a fool, the chronic's a fool. Got me thinking out loud. Sleep on my drunkenness, I blow your brains out. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.
My revolution is as real as Bobby Seals I build. With dudes and Chris worth a quarter mil and Dick Hill. For fish gills, the cops, the time come, I mask up and get my comrade off the bus. Up the beef, I snatch a seed from Chuck E. Cheese and feed them to the rats in the back of the peas. Black fatigue and off the scenes on a sofa. 50-inch flat screen, Louis Vuitton holster. My motions don't appeal to appellate division. I did it strong for 7 long years in prison. Of the system, I'm like a modern-day Hitler. A black gorilla, crib and blood and one only killer. Know my face, I be the case for the wish at the police. Look at the name Lake. Go simultaneously with street revolution. 21 gun salute the new Huey Newton.
Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Teach our woman how to hold a family down in case something happens to us fathers. Protect the children, grab revolvers. The woman plays an important part of our life force. So what we fight for, my heart goes to you beautiful wife in war.
Enlist in more and talk less. Watch all and trust none. Demand your respect. And be ready to die for what you believe in. And ride all the time, not just when convenient.
Justice and freedom, wisdom and understanding. We the lost children of Israel in this western world region. You ain't a man, you a coward if you can't support the girl you put a seed in.
Strong rule the weak, but the wise rule is strong. It's more to a war than just getting it on. Seal your form, cover your tracks, stay prepared. I don't care, no one's spared.
Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. The struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer, right?
Yes.
And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mitch Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over!
Mr. Jackson, sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see you today.
from TVCSI.
This is the military, David.
Free the land, revolutionary grief. Welcome to another edition of Georgia Anniversary Radio. I'm your host, Bumani Shakir, where our goals are fivefold. Our first goal is to eradicate functional literacy among new African prisoners. Our second goal is to eradicate cultural ignorance among new African prisoners. Our third goal is transforming criminal mentality to the new African mentality. The fourth goal is to assist in the rebuilding and stabilization of the new African community. Our fifth goal is to prepare a new African prisoner for release, reducing new African recidivism. And the overall goal is transforming the whole prison industrial slave complex to big institutional learning through education and means. Before I bring it out a guest tonight, I'd like to go over a couple of events that happened in history during this week. On April 3rd, 1865, the 50th Massachusetts Colored Cavalry and its units of the 25th Corps were in the vanguard of Union troops entering Richmond. Also in 1865, the 2nd Division of the 25th Corps helped chase Robert E. Lee's army from Petersburg to Appomattox Courthouse that lasted April 3rd through the 10th. The Black Division and White Union soldiers was advancing in General Lee's trap army with fixed bayonets when the Confederate troops surrendered. 1944, Supreme Court Smith versus Allwright said white primaries that excluded blacks were unconstitutional. In 1942, Dr. Tobias Small was born. Dr. Tobias Small, who's still living, is actually a physician. At one time, he served as Comrade George Jackson, physician going to the prison and taking care of him, as well as Huey P. Newton, Angela Davis, and other individuals. In 1950, Carter G. Woodson, the father of black history, died in Washington at the age of 74. In 1963, Martin Luther King Jr. opened an anti-segregation campaign in Birmingham. More than 2,000 demonstrators, including King, were arrested before the campaign ended. In 1980, singer Sarah Vaughan won the Charm Review State of the singers who changed the dimension of jazz singing, died at her home in San Fernando Valley, California, at the age of 66. In 1996, Ronald H. Brown, Secretary of Commerce and former chairman of the Democratic National Committee, was killed in a plane crash in Croatia at the age of 54. Also, Carl Stokes, former Cleveland mayor, who was the first black mayor of a major U.S. city, died in Cleveland at the age of 68. April 4, 1899, musician Edward Kennedy, a.k.a. Duke Ellington, was born in Washington, D.C. In 1887, Dr. William Henry Bowens, who was certified in ear, nose, and throat in 1924 as a black medical specialist, devised a way to remove a tonsil in 10 minutes with little or no bleeding. In 1968, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated by a white sniper in Memphis, Tennessee. Assassination precipitated national crisis and rioting in more than 125 cities. 46 persons were killed in major rebellions in Washington, Chicago, and other cities. 20,000 federal troops and 34,000 National Guardsmen were mobilized to quell disturbances. Memorial marches and rallies were held throughout the country. Many public school systems closed, and the opening of the baseball season was postponed. President Lyndon B. Johnson declared Sunday, April 7th, a national day of mourning, and ordered all U.S. flags on government buildings and all U.S. territory possessions to fly at half mast. In 1972, Adam Clayton Powell Jr., former congressman and civil rights leader, died in Miami at the age of 63. April the 5th is the birthday of Wadia Jamal, Abu-Jamal, who the wife, political prisoner, Muammar Abu-Jamal. He also the born day, Mansa Fode Ajamu, leader of Sierra Leone. On April the 5th, 1839, Robert Smalls, civil rights hero and Reconstruction congressman, was born in Beaufort, South Carolina. 1856, Booker T. Washington, born a slave in Franklin County, Virginia. He was an educator and the founder of Tuskegee University. In 1976, FBI documents released in a response to a Freedom Information suit revealed that the government mounted an extensive campaign against civil rights organization in 1960. In a letter dated August 25th, 1967, the FBI said the government operation called COINTELPRO, which stands for Counterintelligence Program, was designed to expose, disrupt, misdirect, discredit, or otherwise neutralize the activities of black nationalists, hate-type groups, what they want to say, their leadership, spokesmen, membership, and supporters, and to counter their propensity for violence and civil disorders. A later telegram specifically named the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and the Southern Christian Leadership Conference as organization with radical and violent-prone leaders, members, and followers. The leader of the Southern Christian Conference was Martin Luther King, Jr., the world's foremost advocate of nonviolence. They don't discriminate. Okay. On today, it is August 6th, 1830. Jane Augustine Healy, the first black Roman Catholic bishop in America, was born to an Irish planter and a slave on a plantation near Macon, Georgia. 1869, Ebenezer Don Carlos Bassett, principal of the Institute for Colored Youth in Philadelphia, was named minister to Haiti and became the first major black diplomat and the first American black to receive a major appointment for the United States government. In 1909, Commander Robert E. Peary reached North Pole. The only American with Peary was the man he identified as my Negro assistant, Matthew Henson. In 1931, the first Scottsboro trial began in Scottsboro, Alabama. The trial of nine black youth falsely accused of raping two white women on a freight train became a case celebre. In 1968, 70-year-old Black Panther Party member Bobby Hale was killed by police in Oakland, California. He was the first recruit. Young man. Okay, 1987. Jackie Robinson, the first black in Major League Baseball. The first black in Major League Baseball in modern time was honored on the 40th anniversary of his historic breakthrough. Okay. April the 7th. Hold up. 1712. A slave revolt occurred in New York City. Nine whites were killed and 21 slaves were executed. In 1743, Toussaint Louverture was born. He organized the first successful black revolution in the Western Hemisphere, led Haiti to independence. In 1934, William Monroe Trotter. He died 62 years after his birthday on April the 7th, 1877 in Boston. In 1947, David G.I. Johnson was born. He's a member of the San Quentin Six and a close comrade George. In 1950, Dr. Kukaiya Patterson was born. He's a close comrade of Dr. Matula Shakur. He's a continued average citizen. He's also an acupuncturist as well. Talk about the Bible, Dr. Matula Shakur. In 1968, some 300 Tuskegee students held 12 of the school trustees captive for 12 hours and demanded campus reforms. In 1987, Chicago Mayor Harold Washington was reelected. April the 8th, 1938, Joe Oliver, a pioneer jazz star, died in Savannah, Georgia at the age of 53. In 1974, Henry Hank Aaron, of the Atlanta Braves. He broke Babe Ruth's Major League Baseball record by hitting his 715th home run in a game at Alabama Stadium, in a game at Atlanta Stadium. In 1980, state troopers mobilized to stop disturbances in Wrightsville, Georgia. Racial incidents reported in 1980 in Chattanooga, Tennessee, by California. Wichita, Kansas, 1993, Mary Anderson, the first black singer signed by the Metropolitan Opera, died in Portland at the age of 91. On April the 9th, 1816, the African Methodist Episcopal Church organized a general convention in Philadelphia. On April the 10th, Richard Allen was elected bishop. In 1865, nine black regiments of General John Hawkins' division helped smash Confederate defenses at Fort Blakely, Alabama. The capture of the fort led to the fall of Mobile. The 66th USCT had the highest number of casualties in the engagement. In 1866, civil rights bill passed over the president's veto, conferred citizenship on blacks, and gave them the same right in every state and territory as it enjoyed by white citizens. In 1870, the American Anti-Slavery Society was dissolved. Paul Robeson, actor, singer, worldwide advocate of freedom for African people, born in 1898. 1939, 75,000 blacks and whites attended a Mary Anderson concert on Easter Sunday, at the Lincoln Memorial in Washington. Outdoor concert was scheduled after the Daughters of the American Revolution refused for racial reasons to permit Anderson to sing in Constitution Hall. In 1947, CORE and the Fellowship of Reconciliation sent 25 black and white freedom riders through the South to test compliance with court decisions. In 1968, Martin Luther King Jr. was buried after funeral service at Ebenezer Baptist Church and memorial service at Morehouse College, Atlanta. More than 300,000 persons marched behind coffin of a slain leader, which was carried through the streets of Atlanta on a farm wagon pulled by two Georgia mules. Scores of national dignitaries, including Vice President Hubert Humphrey, attended the funeral. Also, Ralph David Abernathy was elected to succeed King, the head of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. In 2001, baseball star Willie Stargell died in Wilmington, North Carolina at the age of 61. Those are a couple of events happening in history during this week. But of course, there are more, but the show must continue on. All I say, free the land, all over there by land, revolutionary ingredients, free all the cash, new African citizens, free all the new African political prisoners, free all the African POWs, free all the political prisoners of the Black Liberation Movement, throughout the political prison of the Pan-African National Movement, as well as the Port of Infinity Movement, and all the other political prisoners that are falsely incarcerated and captured because of their political beliefs. And I would thank everybody who's been joining our broadcast in 2014. Thank everybody in the community who've been educating themselves, currently organizing, propagating, and just overall joining the resistance, the gaining independence, or wherever they're in particularly again. I'd like to welcome on the show tonight, Elder Abdul Olugbo Shakur. Free the land, Conrad. Jumbo.
Free the land, Jumbo. Where I got it?
Yes, sir. In zero sound now. Wait. How you doing, good Conrad?
Nah. Can't stop, won't stop. You know that.
Yes, sir. Machine.
I'm doing pretty good.
Yes, sir. What's up, man? Good to hear your voice, man, considering the circumstances, man. Good to hear your voice and see you still, you know what I'm saying, pushing forward within the movement to gain the independence, man. You know, before we get into this,
you
man,
know,
tell the people, get the people, okay.
No, what I'm going to say to you, right, the thing is, you know, as New African revolutionaries, right, we tend to put more focus on the individual, not the people, right? I'm a revolutionary.
Yes, sir.
This is what I was built for, made for, and born for, you know? So I'm saying, like, this is what we do. We understand when we make that commitment, either we're going to end up dead or in prison for the rest of our lives. And that's why, too, comrade, you know, I don't do that much sniveling and crying. And I'm not saying those who do are sniveling and crying, but I myself look at it differently, right? I'm a revolutionary. I'm a tool in the hands of the people. Use me to protect and defend what we have, protect and defend our land, our territory, fighting the interests of our people, you know, and if that means sacrificing my life in the interests of the people, then that's what I do, right? And I only say that to say, you know, the introduction of myself is really the introduction of my commitment to the struggle. You understand what I'm saying? It's the commitment to the struggle.
Yes,
that's
sir.
My introduction, you know. It's more about the people than about me. And we tend to take the focus off of people. And I tell comrades, why are we fighting? Who are we fighting for? The focus is the people. The focus is our future generation. The focus is the independence of our people. That's the focus. You know, we're just tools in the service of our people. And the people always come first before us at all times. We must be conscious of that at all times. We tend to personalize the struggle and make it about us. And that reflects some of the failures of the struggle. When we place our ego before the people and we lose the ability or capacity to think objectively opposed to subjectively. You know, like when someone attacks a particular objective, we take it personal. If it's constructive criticism and we call ourselves leaders, it is to be taken for what it is, a corrective measure to reanalyze the objective itself. But I'm only saying this in terms of, you know, when one say, well, you know, introduce ourselves, right? We introduce ourselves as it relates to our service to the people, you know. And many may disagree, so be it. It's not a debate issue, right? But I, as a New African revolutionary nationalist, guerrilla, citizen of the Republic of New Africa, I believe that the people will always come first, and the service to the people is all that matters.
Yes, sir. True indeed, man. Let's understand, you know, and the Code of Moses speaks about, the Code of Moses talks about the highest form, the highest power of the people, you know. Without the people, you can't have no nation.
Yeah.
Without the people, you can't have no government. Without the people, you can't have no organization. You know, you can't have none without the people. No college, no collective, no unit, no nothing. You know, so that's right in the Zach, man. You know,
nothing.
And also that, also what you were saying in regards to, like, once the individual takes an oath or allegiance to anything, if it be a kiapu, where you want to refer to it as, right? You know, once a individual take that particular oath, he or she is bonded by life as a form of commitment, you know, and it's basically death for the sinners in regard to their particular services, right? You know, and that's something that people need to consider. They need to consider that once they sign up for it. Like you said, you know, once you start getting involved into particular activities and works and actions, one of the first things going to happen that, you know what I'm saying, a lot of times your family ain't going to show you because they don't understand your particular beliefs. Then you got to consider, you know what I'm saying, being incarcerated, being in exile, being murdered, you know. You got to consider those things. And also, you got to consider that being a revolutionary or being somebody that anti-system is considered a crime in their eyes, you know. So we got to consider all those things. Once you sign up, you got to know exactly what you signed up to.
And some of the clear examples, like, for example, when Malcolm X was assassinated, right, that particular movement, the Black Revolutionary National Movement, died because everyone used Malcolm as a crutch. That's when you place personalities to the struggle, and it's easy for the government. All they do is just target the personality. They target Malcolm X. That movement died. When they target Martin Luther King Jr., the Civil Rights Movement died. It ain't never been the same since then. When they target George, when they target Bunchy, you can see, because we have a tendency to attach personalities to our struggle, and the government understand that. So what they do, they target those personalities, because we have the tendency to put the revolutionary before the revolution. And all we have to do, look at, if you analyze the struggle from a scientific perspective, because the struggle is a science, you will see the errors that was made as a direct result of putting a personality before the people. Because all they have to do is go after the personality and the movement will die. Marcus Garvey the same way. When they assassinate Marcus Garvey in terms of putting him in prison, deporting him out of the United States, that destroys the movement. And you can look at every example of that. We have not learned from that because we don't understand that the struggle is an exact science. It's about the people. So let's say this is the other side. Say you organize the struggle according to that science, and it's about the people. You can kill me. They can kill you. They can kill Sheen. They can kill all the top leaders, but the people still move because they will pop up to take a leadership position. Because they have been trained and organized for that. So when we say, well, we are a leader, you are also a leader. And we will train you accordingly. So every time you chop their head off, a new head will grow. Because it's not based on a personal individual. It's not based on a personality. It's based on the collective. So everyone should understand that they are a potential leader. And they're going to come a time where they have to take lead. But we have to train them accordingly. But the movement has failed to do that because once they remove certain leaders from certain groups, that group is no longer effective. That movement is no longer effective, and they know that. And this continues to work effectively because we have yet to fully respond to it. Because we, as a collective, as a movement, do not understand that the struggle is an exact science. So that's the ramification, negative ramification, of putting the personality as the forefront of the struggle. And that's why when people ask, hey, Abdul, give us a brief introduction about yourself. I resist that because this is why I resist it. I say it's about the people. And we need to understand that this movement is about them. This is your movement. We're just tools in the hands of the people. And we put you before we put ourselves. You know? And that's what we need to understand. But you ain't going to find any people in the movement to do that because they got the ego and personality out there. I'm not here to be popular. I wouldn't care if you like me or dislike me. I don't care nothing about that. I'm a revolutionary. I'm a tool in the hands of the people. Use me accordingly. And I will fight accordingly. You know? And that's why it's important because, again, this contradicts the reality of the fact that the struggle is an exact science. And we, as a movement, totally dismiss that fact. When we fail to understand that the struggle is exact science, we continue to repeat ourselves over and over again. And then we refuse to take constructive criticism for what it is designed for, corrective measures, to cause pause for an individual or group to reevaluate, to reanalyze their perspective, to reanalyze their projects and objectives. For example, let's say this here. We as a movement have been passing out grocery bags since the 60s. That is a temporary fix. It is necessary. Don't get me wrong. We have to do that because many of our people are hungry. We have to do that. We have to establish community garden. There's no disputing that. But the science tells us if we want to be independent, we have to develop and grow our own food source because passing out a grocery bag is not that. Because you dump that grocery bag out, everything in that bag belongs to our oppressor. We still dependent on them. Because you put it in the bag and pass out doesn't change that fact. It doesn't change that power dynamic. But we continue to do this since the 60s. The science tells us this. We continue to do that as a temporary fix. But it also said that we must acquire land. We must establish an independent food source. So no matter what they do, raise prices, contaminate their food, we will have a safe and affordable food source to feed our people, to feed our community. This is some of the stages where we're talking about independence. This is the anonymous infrastructure that we must develop to separate ourselves from this government. When people say, what did government look like? What does self-government look like? They haven't seen that because there's no community where self-government is functioning at. What is a self-government? You have to create institutions, not programs. You have to create institutions that will replace the institution of our opposition. We must have our own hospital. We must have our own Department of Agriculture. We must have our own security forces to secure our community. We must have our own schools. We must govern the day-to-day conditions of our community. That's what self-government looks like. They haven't seen it, you know? And at the rate they won't see it because of our approaches. We focus on little programs, and don't get me wrong, programs are a tactical, strategic goal, and that's creating our own institution. Like when Comrade George said, anonymous infrastructure. If you read and study George, George is talking about building institutions. You have to build institutions. A program not going to replace a new hospital or a new school. We have to build our own education system. And we have the resources at our disposal, but we have yet again to fully understand the importance of economics from a new African social standpoint. From a corporate economic standpoint, not a European standpoint, not a Russia or China communist standpoint, from a new African standpoint, what do we mean by socialism? And what people don't understand that socialism is indigenous to Africa, not Russia, not China, but to Africa. And what that means is, again, Juan Carreño understood this. He took the principle of cooperative economics, collective work responsibility. He understood that was the roots and basis of African socialism. Cooperative economics. Let's say we develop a business, and when we utilize New African Socialism, this is how we utilize it. Say I'm the CEO of a business. I'm not going to make $10 million while you're making minimum wages. That's the capitalist approach. I'm doing well, but you're suffering. I'm going to make a set fee that is based on my needs, and I ain't got no problem with that. I'm not trying to be a millionaire. Give me what I need to survive and help my family. But every worker that works for you, because this business is about the people. They run and own this business. There should be no one in that business suffering, struggling, maybe from health care, paying your bills, paying your rent, because the majority of the profit will go back to the people. That's cooperative economics. That's the basics of New African Socialism. Get all that European crap out your head, because you cannot import socialism from another country, because it's based on the concrete conditions of the country that you live in. We have our own experience.
Yes, sir.
We have our own struggle. So I'm saying whatever we do must be based on this. We cannot import socialism and communism and all these other ideologies from other countries, especially when they have not been successful. So why would I import communism from Russia? Well, Russia is not even a communist country. Why would I import communism from China? China is not a communist country. China is more capitalist imperialist than anything else. We have our own ideological development here. We know the principles of our ancestors. We know the principles that have been applied here. Ron Carreño initially had it right, but it have been distorted and unrecognizable now. When he implemented them seven principles, those seven principles was specifically based on independence. Independence. Self-determination. You can't say self-determination and still believe in this government. You cannot talk about cooperative economics and collective work responsibility and talking about I support this government. You water down what this principle really stands for. If you go back to our ancestors and look how they applied self-determination, look how they applied cooperative economics, collective work responsibility. We're not doing that. How they apply unity. We're not doing that. And like when I was growing up as a Panther Cub, one of the things I've said this over and over again and it's relevant. One of the things my father told me to do, get that clipboard and go door to door. I knew everybody in my community. I'm talking about 300-400 people in my community. Knew everyone, their mama, their daddy, everyone. And I went door to door. That's the basic step towards facilitating unity. If I don't know you, how can we unite? If you live next door to me and I never go next door to check on you, that's not unity. Unity is something that you must work for. Unity is something that you must strive for. You can't just say, yeah, black unity, black power, and that's it. You got to build a relationship with that community. You have to make an effort every single day. And I was young, and I went to door. I spent more of my time with the elders than I did with the knuckleheads in the hood. I went door to door because I understood how important it was. They knew everything about me. I knew everything about them. And I would introduce, like, I gave, like, one story I told. I introduced Mrs. Cooper to Mrs. Smith. They became best friends. They live a block and a half down the street. They didn't even know each other. But I introduced them two together. Then I introduced Mrs. Cooper to Mrs. Bolden, Mrs. Bolden to Mrs. Ellis. I did that, and I was, like, 12, 13 years old, you know, because it began to unify our community. Then we started doing the Barton system where, say, like, Mrs. Smith, she grew grapes. She gave grapes to Mrs. Cooper. Mrs. Cooper grew this big, giant lettuce head. I mean, big. She trained with lettuce. We had a lot of individuals that did not have a garden. They didn't have the space. So we gave them food every week. But this is where it started. That's why the community was different. We looked out for each other. If someone is burglarizing the house, we didn't call 911. We get our guns and go over and handle it. So now you're stealing from the people, you know? So I'm just saying, and it can still be done, but a lot of people have been discouraged. The struggle is what it is, a struggle. And you don't look at the immediate. You look at what's your role in this struggle. You have to build a foundation, and you have to build upon that foundation. That means I know for a fact at some point we're going to win. That's going to be determined by what we do right now. We're not going to be independent right now. We're not going to be successful as a collective. I'm not talking about the individual crap. I'm talking about as a collective. We're not going to be successful right now as a collective. We're not going to be independent right now. I understand that. but we have to play a role in establishing a blueprint and the foundation that will allow each generation to build on. Focus on building your role, doing what you have to do to build that foundation. You know, maybe a unity, maybe build an institution that will allow us to feed ourselves, clothe ourselves, maybe establishing businesses in our community. We all have to play a role. Maybe the education of our people, the reorientation and reindoctrination of our people. We all have a role to play. Because what we're doing, we're laying down the blueprint for the next generation. And if we do this right from a scientific standpoint, 20, 30, 40 years from now, we'll be closer to independence than where we're at right now. How can we say that we're close to independent or being free when we have no control over our community at all? 99% of that homes in our community throughout the country is owned by outsiders. 99% of the businesses in our community is owned by outsiders. We do not control the flow of water or electricity that comes through our community. What the hell do we own? We still under subjugation to the same power that enslaved our ancestors. And always, when I run into these Negroes, especially the NAACP, when they say, well, Brother Abdul, we have made progress. Look where we at right now. I said, check this out. Let me be raw from the street like a gorilla. Okay, and let's say this here. 200 years ago, the slave master had 100 boots up our ass. Here we are now in 2022, the slave master got 87 boots up our ass. We have not made no progress. And then he said, why you say that? I still got 87 boots up my ass. And I wasn't born to have boots up my ass. When I remove every boot from my ass, then I'm going to say we made progress. I'm not going to say progress when they still got the knee on my neck and the foot up my ass. That's not progress. I was able to remove 10 boots out of my ass. We're making progress now. And that's how we define freedom. You're free because you remove 10 boots from your ass. I will be free, and we will be free when we remove 100 boots from my ass, so we shouldn't have no boots in our ass and no knee on our neck. That's freedom. Because now you have the freedom to breathe without being stomped on your neck or the foot up your ass. So what I'm saying, we have to define freedom and independence on our own. We cannot utilize their definition. We'd be in trouble if we utilize their definition. We'd never be free if we utilize their definition. We have to be politically mature enough to step back and reanalyze the struggle. No one is perfect. We're going to make mistakes. You have to acknowledge those mistakes because those mistakes are lessons. You have to approach the struggle like a science. Every time I fall, I get back up and I reanalyze everything I did wrong and did right. I assess the strength and weakness of my move. It's like a chess. I think before I move. That doesn't mean I'm right all the time. But every time I make a mistake, I'm going to analyze that mistake. I'm going to try to use corrective measures to correct that. Okay, what did I learn from this mistake? And I'm talking from a revolutionary standpoint. If we put together a program in the community, I never fail. I never blame the community for not supporting the program. A lot of people in the struggle do that. I won't. Because it's up to me to speak the language that's going to get them involved. I have the proposal that I believe is going to solve this problem. It is my responsibility, the responsibility of our revolutionary movement, to convince them this is the program. This is the institution. If they're not listening and they're not responding, we have to go back to the drawing board. You can't just say, well, I mean, our people are dumb, deaf, and blind. Yeah. But we at one time, we were dumb, deaf, and blind, and we was awakened. And somebody was patient with us. We have to utilize that same approach. We have to find that key to open up that door. How do we open that door of consciousness? We have to find a way. And who understands the community better than we do? We understand our community better than anyone. And no one outside our community can address the gang violence and drugs in our community better than we do. We understand it better than anyone. That understanding will allow us to develop programs and institutions and objectives that will allow us to eradicate that process. And the George Jackson University is a direct manifestation of that understanding, comrade.
Sure. Yes, sir. Tell me, why is that? Why is George Jackson University a direct manifestation? Tell me that. Why is that?
Yeah.
What's the significance of George Jackson
University? Okay, we understand that there's a pipeline that facilitates the mass incarceration of our people. We understand that there are conditions orchestrating our community to give life to this mentality, and they exploit that mentality, which facilitate their path from the hood to prison. Now, in order for us to be effective in stabilizing our community, we have to also eradicate the black criminal mentality. We have to eradicate that mentality, which is self-destructive to our community. Prison afforded that opportunity because now we got their attention. They're right here. If we can turn every cell into a classroom, into a think tank in the service of our community, instead of paroling brothers and sisters community, we will be graduating brothers and sisters from the George Jackson University to serve as an asset to the community, not a liability. They're in these cells all day, every day. We have direct access to them all day, every day. We have this opportunity to aid and assist in their transition. The governments are trying to transform this mentality because they have exploited. They have made a $1 billion industry out of this prison industrial slave complex. The George Jackson University said, we're going to stop this. We on the front line. We in the trenches. All these cells can be turned into classrooms. I'm talking about New African brothers and sisters. These cells can be turned into classrooms. Every cell can be turned into a classroom. Every cell can be turned into a think tank. The cell is what you make of it. If you wake up in the morning and say this is a cell, you're not going to be successful or effective in resisting racial oppression or fascism. But if you wake up in the cell and say, okay, this is my gym. When I get done, this is going to be my school where I learn and study. When I get done with that, this is going to be my think tank in the service of the community. How do I develop an analysis, proposals, ideas that are going to serve our community? You make this space what it is. If you allow them to make it, you're going to be in trouble. Because now your actions and deeds are going to be dictated by their dictates, not by yours. So when we wake up in the morning, we say, this is our gym. When we're done, we got to go to work. We have transformed this cage into something in the service of our people and our nation, our New African nation. When you don't do that, it becomes in the service of them. The George Jackson University allows us to expand this concept across the country to our people. When we first initiated the George Jackson University in 2000, we had over 30,000 enrolled students across the country, and even in Brazil, South Africa, Jamaica, Cuba. That spooked the hell out the government, and they went at us. They shut it down. Baba Dr. Evans, one of our headquarters in Los Angeles, they burned that down. They banned him from writing me. They banned me from corresponding for almost 5 years. And that facilitated in the brief demise of the George Jackson University. And then in California, anyone that embraced the George Jackson University was sent to isolation, solitary confinement, with an indeterminate sentence. And it was effective in doing so. And I'm going to say this here. One of the reasons why it was effective because of the lack of support we had out there from the community. And the community has to understand that they are the primary stakeholder in this process. Our community is the primary source for filling up these slave complexes. And if we don't implement the right program, the right strategy and tactics, we'll continue to exploit that. The George Jackson University, in conjunction with the Marcus Garvey Study Group, will allow us to use it as an opportunity to eradicate their mindset and to create a process that will allow us to send brothers and sisters to the streets that's going to aid in the building of our community, not in their continued demise. Oftentimes, we always look outward, and that's another problem. We're always looking outward, but we refuse to look inward. The key to our liberation as a people is inward, not outward, because the government only do what we allow it to do. Simple as that. You cannot win a fight from a position of weakness. Not the struggle. So you have to assess what you do as a people, as a movement. And we don't do that. I can tell you, check this out. I can talk about racism all day. And people get enraged and riled up and stuff like that. And tomorrow, racism still exists. 10 years from now, racism still exists. But how do we empower ourselves to put that crap in check? It's not going nowhere. The institution itself, I'm talking about the United States. The government, their ideology, capitalism, imperialism, fascism, colonialism, is all based on white supremacy and money. But how can we create a nation or create a movement that will allow us to keep that shit in check? If you look at the global community, China, Russia, North Korea, United States, all those countries got nuclear bombs. Keep each other in check. Where is our nuclear bomb? We in the gut of the beast. We have to create our nuclear bomb that will keep them in check. unity among our people, collective work responsibility, corporate economics, self-determination is our nuclear bomb. If we were organized as a people and we establish a strong economic base, establish our own businesses, control our own business, own all the communities, own all the homes in our community, that is our nuclear bomb. We will have the power to keep them in check. We will have our own security forces in our community, not these pigs. We will have our own educational institutions, our own hospitals. That's how you keep them in check. That's our nuclear bomb. But now we throwing firecrackers, and then we realize why nothing changed. And I'm going to continue to use this example when it concerns Hurricane Katrina, because that is the perfect example of us throwing firecrackers. That's the perfect example, always looking outward, not inward. That is the perfect example. Because even to this day, we about, 16, 17 years removed from Hurricane Katrina, and not one community. I'm not talking about an individual. I'm talking about not one community in New Orleans or anywhere else is prepared for a natural disaster. But soon something hit, we'll be depending on the very enemy, the very government that we already know before the disaster, don't give a damn about us. And then when they do exactly what they're supposed to do, we start crying and sniveling. But then I ask you, what are you doing? You already know that this government don't give a damn about us, especially the revolutionaries. You know that this government didn't give a damn about us before Hurricane Katrina. So what's your response? Ask the same government for help? When you was in the position to prepare our communities, like right now, we almost 17 years removed, so what have you done? Parts of New Orleans just flooded recently. What have you done as leaders in this community to prepare our people for natural disaster? What is a bug out bag? If a hurricane hit, have they trained you to how to evacuate? Was we prepared for this pandemic, if you believe it or not? We prepared for any pandemic. But who flaw and who fault is that? We continue talking about what the government's not doing. Well, this is our enemy. I don't expect them to lift a finger. If you serious about you really believe that this government don't give a damn about us, then why are you relying depending on them? We have the resources at our disposal. If we go back 100, 200 years ago, we had elders, ancestors who built their own towns under those conditions. They built their own towns when racism was blunt, lynching was a day-to-day thing, and they was able to build their own town. They owned their own banks. They owned every home in them communities. Here we are with all the resources at our disposal, and we barely own 2% of the homes in our community. 2% of the businesses in our community. And we got more resources at our disposal. Explain that. That don't make no damn sense. And our ancestors were able to do it under those conditions with less resources. But we'll blame everybody else for this. We tend to constantly preach about what they're doing opposed to teach about what we need to be doing. We can preach all day about what these folks are doing, what this government is doing. It doesn't change them. No, let me say this here first, so no one to twist me up. Is education important? Yes, education is important. Is exposing racism, is propaganda important? Yes, propaganda is important. But we can't stay stuck on that. That must work in accordance to what we're doing and what we're trying to build. This is why we're building these independent communities. This is why we're building our own institution. You know, but we stay focused on that as if that is the struggle. And again, like I say, man, criticism and self-criticism is critical in our development. It's critical in our development because every time we do something, we reevaluate what we're doing. Some of the same ideas we had back in the 80s, the 90s, we continue to revisit them. We continue to reassess them. Because they fail in the 80s doesn't mean they are not applicable. They are applicable. When we look at the SAC, you know what I'm saying, the Sustainable Agriculture Commune, specifically designed to address the issue of hunger starvation in our community, right? That is not new.
Yes, sir.
That's over 20 years old. But we have to continue to build and wait for the right climate and conditions to implement it. We don't throw these ideas away. A lot of our ideas we developed while we was in solitary confinement. When we was in solitary confinement, we had a think tank, a New African Revolutionary National Collective think tank, where we as a collective identified certain issues, like maybe how do we resolve the gang violence and drugs in our community? How do we resolve the crime in our community, unemployment? And we take it on. George Jackson University is the answer, and the Mark Garvey Study Group is the answer to that. How do we eradicate hunger in our community? The SAC is the answer to that. We understand too that when it comes to math and science, our community is at the bottom. So we have the New African Center, Math and Science Center, right? That proposal, that's an old proposal. But it's still applicable because we're still at the bottom when it comes to math and science in our community. So every issue or every contradiction that we face as a community, our think tank, and this think tank was developed in solitary confinement, in isolation, by the New African Citizen class. And during that time, we by ourselves. We in a cell almost 24 hours a day. Almost 24 hours a day, we in the isolation cell. We have nothing else to do but to focus on our community, focus on these issues. We went back and forth. Some issues, we had discussion that went on for like days, arguments, you know. We had to write notes. And this is my perspective. We sent it to everybody. They look at it. They get a response. It was a long process. And once we say, okay, we think we have what it takes now, we've turned that information to a proposed institution. We turn it to a blueprint for a proposed institution. And we get it out there. That, getting the proposal is one thing. Implementing the proposal is another. And once we develop a proposal, how do we get the people and community organized around it? It's no different with the Asylum Alert Network in response to the AMRA Network. That is something that the community have to implement. But it's our job to convince them. I don't blame the community for the most part that's not embracing, even though they complain about our kids missing, even though they complain about our women missing, our elders missing, even though they complain about the abuse of our women and children. Complaint is not going to correct that. Complaint is not going to find our missing children. We have to put that complaint into an effective reaction that's going to allow us to prevent our kids from being abducted, being molested, being raped, that will protect and defend our women and elders. Understand me? We have to put that in place, but we have to convince them that this is the plan. You know, a lot of people blame the people. And I understand the emotion, because you can get a sister or brother that say, well, our kids are being abused. I agree, but this is what we have to do. But then they'll make no effort in response to that. But all they would do is complain about what these folks are doing. Our women are being abused. You know, our sisters, you know, even when we look at prostitution, I don't look at that as a crime. We look at conditions that have been orchestrated that were allowed, that caused our sisters to say, this is it. This is all I know. We got to go save them. You see what I'm saying? Those sisters, we need to aid and assist them in providing with other means to make money. Instead of going to the strip club and throwing dollars at them, where that same dollar you throw at them can be used to provide them with education, provide them with a trade. You know what I'm saying? But we don't think like that. And that's what I mean by we always throw the rock at them racist folks or this capitalist government. We got to look at ourselves, because they want to do what we allow them to do. We have to look at our response.
It's all about accountability.
Just like with accountability. And that's one of the main problems right now in the struggle. We don't teach about accountability. We don't speak on accountability. Because once you say that, people will say, well, you blame the victim. Damn, now you got it. You got damn right. Because if I slap your ass and you let me slap you, and I keep on slapping you, your ass is in trouble. Stop me from slapping you. Find a way to stop me from slapping your ass. You see what I'm saying? And that's what we have to start thinking. The government's slapping us. And we keep them in the government slapping us. And then if I say, man, you have the resource, you have the skills to defend yourself. Is the opportunity there to learn how to defend yourself. Man, you blaming me. You got to put your guards up, bro. We're in the fight.
Yeah.
If you ain't prepared for this fight, then get out the way.
Yes, sir. You know, when you look at everything now, according to our historical conditions, you know what I'm saying, our dialect and the signs you're talking about, there's no room to blame the oppressor, the white man, the white woman, everything, when everything we're doing now perpetuating the system that we created to be harsh on them. We can perpetuate the same system with the mess neo-colonial mind state. Now we recreating exactly. The system that we're already created and making it better than what the creative system did. So the person to blame is ourselves. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Regards accountability. You know, we got the solutions for everything. If our new African people are the biggest group with buying power, why don't we change that buying power around and do some perspective? Why don't we purchase land? Purchase land? You know what I'm saying? Why don't we purchase the land where we get land, build houses, and you know what I'm saying? Create solar panels, other things of that aspect when we got the bigger buying power, or when we know certain things in our community. And we know we the majority in our community. Why don't we just kind of get to do certain things to make them accomplish and achieve certain things instead of saying that such and such did this or even hate on the other individual because he or she has a better car than you, have better clothes and shoes, you know, things of that nature, right? So the accountability went lacking in regard to accountability and the message and the education and the propaganda, like you said, is lacking in a lot of those aspects of things. So we can't really build successfully and truthfully because we're lacking those particular elements, right? You know, especially when we look deeply about the movement in regards to, like, for instance, you know, in Vietnam, when the Vietnamese people were catching the United States citizens, soldiers or whatever, that they used the tactic of, we're going to do the leader here, the ones who the rebel rouser, we're going to put the press on that individual and everybody else is going to surrender. You know, they're the same tactic they've been utilizing us in regards to our particular movements, right? But, you know what I'm saying? It's just like when you look at the movie or read the book, this food that sat by the door. You know, the brother would implement the same thing that they were teaching him in regards to, like, when a comrade dies or something, another comrade move up, take his place, another move will take his position. You know, so everybody's always a leader. And now everybody always, the cadre always functions. As long as one person exists in the cadre, it's always going to be a cadre because he or she knows exactly where it takes to build a cadre, the functions, from the political standpoint, the functions of the military, the guerrilla standpoint. They know how to understand the thing, so we continue on that particular process. Right. That's an institution within itself, you know. So we start looking at those things from those perspectives in regards to who we are and what we're trying to accomplish and what it actually means for us, what it actually means to have self-determination, what it means to be do for self and things, those terms and what it actually means, like what it actually means to us, then we can actually apply some concrete solutions as solutionary to a particular problem in the ear that we face every day as an individual person, side person and family, then in the community, then in our nation, then in our city, so forth and so on, right? But it's all about that accountability and also getting the information to do so in regard to respecting accountability, especially the criticism aspect about things, you know, because right now you see that a lot of individuals, they like to use social media as a tool for recruiting to certain things, but not actually be active in the community. You'll never see them. You'll never see them in the community. They don't know who's staying in the neighborhood. You'll never see them in certain things. They don't even know who's staying in the neighborhood, you know, at least alone. Know a lot of the people they talking to on social media, right? People want to be celebrities in regards to particular aspects of things, right? And that's not what it's about, you know, because, you know, a lot of it seems to be funny, but, you know, and it's all astrality. That's what a lot of people are geared toward, you know what I'm saying, to be celebrities, you know what I'm saying? And that's when you go back to the aspect of a hero worshiping. Such and such did this in the movement. Okay, and since they did in the movement, but what makes you think other people can do the same thing they already did have some great accomplishments also? You can't, they don't take away the credit from what other individuals can do and what people can do as a whole. No. You know, just because certain individuals did certain things or such and such ain't around, so I'm not going to support it because such and such doesn't support it. I'm not going to do it because such and such is not alive, or, you know. It's just a lot of...
And that's why I said what I said at the beginning too, but mine in terms of personality and egos, you know.
Yeah, it's a lot of that going on, man. You know.
And we tend to put the individual before the people. But see, here's the thing too, right? If we understand the signs of New African dollar materialism, right? If we really understand the signs, there's no problem that we can't solve. There's no absolute, you know. And when I was talking to one brother, and we were talking about the issue of drugs, right? His only response was, man, they bring the drugs in. Okay, I understand that. We know it comes from somewhere. Now, what do we do with that? You saying they bring it in ain't going to stop them from bringing it in. So what do we do with that now? We all understand that they bring the drugs in. That's your only response? So we ain't going to deal with the issue of what we do in response to that. Because ultimately, it's going to be determined by how we respond to it. Yes, they bring the drugs in. But who's forcing you to sell that poison? What are the conditions that will allow us to put a stop to that? Do we have any other means available to them youngsters where they can make just as much money without destroying the community? We have to address that. We can't keep saying, well, they bring the drugs in. Just like when they say, man, they bring the guns in. We know that, too. They bring the guns in. There's no secret. They've been bringing the guns in. But what's our response to it? They say they bring the guns in? That's not a response. That's already established they bring the guns in. It's not falling from space. They bring it in. Now, the thing is, what do we do with it when we get it? What do we do with it when we get it? That's the key.
You got to reach out all the energy.
Yes, they bring it in.
All the energy of the productivity.
Yeah, so this is what I mean.
It's all about direction.
Say it again, my brother.
I say it's all about direction in regard to the situation. All of them circumstances is about direction. If people bringing drugs in, what you going to do to stop the situation? If bringing guns in, how you going to get them guns utilized for our benefit? You know, so it's all about direction in regard to that and choice. You know,
we're spending all day talking about
what I was saying earlier about the accountability. That's what I was saying earlier about the accountability in regards to, like, you know, the system already been created. It's us that recreating the wheel over and over again by our own ways of action, by our own mentality. We doing that.
Yeah.
Not the system. It's us doing that. You know, the system been dealing, they did.
Making it easy.
They did hundreds of years ago. You know what I'm saying? So we doing what we doing now to ourselves. And the system laying back in the cut, just laughing, and just, you know, devising better plans to get more money to make up fighting and destroy each other. That's what they doing.
Yeah.
They ain't got to do too much work.
And we're doing
the majority of the work.
And then more money. And then when it comes to education, right, they got it so twisted. When we see a brother or a sister going to school trying to learn stuff, we call him a sellout or call her a sellout. We call them nerds because they try and go to school and learn something like math and science. The math and science that we're going to need in the future. We need brothers that is advanced in science and math. What kind of society are we trying to create for our people? You know what I'm saying? We're not going to the cave. Math and science and that technology is the future, is the present. So when you get a sister and brother that's going to school, that's not a nerd. That's not a square, but we'll help and isolate that individual. We help and alienate that individual. Now you got brothers and sisters that, man, I'm not going to do that because they want to be isolated and single out. Who say intelligence belongs to the white folks? Who said that? If we go back to history, intelligence is the source, and education is the source of Africa. So what I'm saying is, but we got people think, oh, man, now if you start talking like that, you talk white. Who? Talk white because you sound intelligent? You talking white? That's saying you reinforcing that bullshit that they are superior then. Because in order to sound intelligent, you have to be white. In order to sound intelligent, you have to be part of that race or part of that. Who said that? We were speaking intelligently before we even met and came in contact with anybody.
True, you know, Dr. John Clark. You know, Dr. John Clark fooled that when he began his debate. He told a white scholar, like, you know, I don't debate my equal everybody else I teach. He proved that at the beginning of his debate, you know. And it can't be refuted. He told him about the real Atlanta. You just a student, so I'm about to teach you. He told it out the real what time was,
exactly.
You know. So you can't refute that situation, man, in regards to our intelligence, you know. Even in history, all the so-called, the whole American academic system is founded on the several liberal arts and science of Greece. And all the Greek liberal arts and science is founded on the principle of Kemet in Africa, you know, finding no particular principle. So.
Yeah.
We look at the American academic system. You're looking at everything that came from our ancestors in regard to what they were teaching in their schools and their mystery schools, right? They just formulated and whitewashed and turned it to a European and a Greek standpoint to make it seem something different. Like Ralph Ellison said, we the invisible man, invisible woman. You know, in regard to our particular state, that he wanted us to be in regard to their presentation, right? To make us only be human capital. To actually feed the system of capitalism in general, you know, the foundation of it.
Exactly. And then got our backward ass thinking, man, science and math and education ain't good for you. You trying to be white. I mean, listen to that shit. Listen to it. You a nerd and you trying to be white because you going to school and trying to learn these skills. But yet, if you ditch school and don't go to class, yeah, I'm that new African. No, you ain't, you buffoon-ass fool. That's not a new African. The new African going to take advantage of every opportunity. Learn that science and math and use that science and math to build our new African nation. Use that science and math to build your community. Bring that computer technology back to the community so we can start our own computer technology, so we can start our own technology companies. That's what you do. You go get it. Go to MIT and get the information and come back to the hood with it. You know what I'm saying? Yes, maybe engineer, it doesn't matter. Come back to the hood with it so we can build our communities. Instead, you know, somebody go to school and learn, they not in sports, or he's a square, he's a nerd, he's a punk. But yeah, okay, I'd rather be a nerd than an idiot. You know, so, okay. And that's the thing.
Sure.
And that's the thing, sure, and that's indeed. The thing that, yeah.
True indeed, Parcel Conrad.
But mine is teach our kids. We got to teach our people the importance of education as it applies from a strategic standpoint. When we talk about math and science,
yes,
we need our kids in math and science so they can bring that back to the community. We need our kids in engineering. Understand me? We have to understand this is not a nerve science. Understand me? This is the power to empower our community, to empower our people so we can build that independent nation, so we can build our own business, so we can build our own economy. You can't do that if you ain't reading and writing and studying. You can't do it.
No doubt. No doubt. No doubt. Before we for the time, let me ask you this question. I'm going to open a couple of lines, man. We got a community release board petition going on, right? Going around, floating around. Tell the people what that is about, the community board release board petition, and what the purpose of it, how people can get involved with it, how
okay.
people sign it.
And here goes the thing. Shoot. My comrade and my cellmate, he's one of the main coordinators for the community release board, right? So, like I say, I put a person in place who's more qualified to speak on that. Though I'm there too, I was there from the beginning, but my comrade here, he can speak on it better.
Breaking
that old man up.
Speak on the
what's going on, Conrad?
Oh, money.
Yes,
sir, Conrad. Money. Yes, sir.
What's going on?
Yes, I'm here, Conrad. Oh, man, you're trying to, Conrad. Just pushing the line. Jumbo. Jumbo. You're pushing the line, Conrad. You already know. Yeah, man. I'm trying to get a better understanding.
Clarity on the community release board petition, man, tell the people about it so they can get a better understanding of it, what it's about and what the purpose and aim is, you know what I'm saying, how you can sign the petition, you know.
In essence, over the course of the last, since the prison industrial slave complex has been in existence, one of its primary components has been the Board of Parole Hearings. The way the Board of Parole Hearings functions is one of the primary components of the PISC is ensuring that you have a base population of prisons from which to extract surplus value from the state's general fund. Dig this. In the state of California, it costs $106,000 a year to hold one prisoner inside of a prison. That means the cost of incarceration is higher than 1 year of tuition at Harvard. They're not spending no $106,000 on nobody inside these cells. To take care of you for a year probably cost them $6,000. The other $100,000 is going to the pocket of prison guards, administrators, and members of the Board of Parole Hearings. What a lot of people don't understand is the primary composition of the Board of Parole Hearings is all law enforcement, former judges, former district attorneys, former prison guards, former police officers, former sheriffs. The way that a Board of Parole Hearing, the board is actually selected is by the legislature. The legislature, as we all know, are beholden to the special interest groups that put them in office. One of the primary and most powerful lobbies in the state of California is California Correctional Peace Officers Association, the CCPOA. The CCPOA is the individuals that specifically select legislators and governors. They're the ones who select the board from a pool of law enforcement officials. So it doesn't, it's not a broad leap for us to understand that the reason why you have brothers who have served their time, and I hit you with a couple of statistics. The recidivism rate for those who are 50 years or older who have served 20 years or more continuous confinement is 0.015%. That's a fraction of 1%. It's not even 1%. It's a fraction of 1%. That is the primary basis, that is the primary population pool of the indeterminate sentence class, those of us who go to parole board. Now, in every single early release scheme that's been put forth for the last decade, they have concentrated on what they call nonviolent drug offenders. Nonviolent drug offenders have recidivism rate of 72%. They focus on releasing those they know coming right back, oftentimes coming back for more serious offenses. Now, the primary stakeholder who was released and when is not a sheriff who ain't never been in our community. It ain't some district attorney who don't even know what your community look like. It's not some judge who has no concept of the contradictions that exist in your community that led and gave rise to the conditions that brought this brother or sister to the penitentiary. The primary stakeholders, those in the community that these brothers and sisters are going back to. The basis of the community release board is ensuring that the power to parole, pardon, or grant clemency to those who are up for parole ultimately lies into the hands of the people. Currently, it's in the hands of the Board of Parole here. The way the CRB functions is this. When you go to your board, you'll be seen by the regular Board of Parole here. They're going to determine whether or not you're going to be released. If you are denied release by the Board of Parole here, your case is then referred to your community's Community Release Board. It's CRB. The CRB utilizing the standards that are inside the parole handbook, as well as taking in consideration the contributions that this particular subject has had in the community over the course of the time they've been in prison, will determine whether or not you are to be released. That's how the Community Release Board functions. The petition is both an online petition, and you have CRB activists, all New Africans, who have hard copies of the CRB petition. They'll be circulating them in events across the country. All you got to do is sign. The more signatures we get, the quicker we can get this ballot initiative put forward to the people, the quicker we can get it passed, the quicker we can take the power away from those who have presided over the expansion of the prison industrial slave complex that in the state of California alone, on an annual basis, spends $20 billion with a B. That's more than most nations' gross domestic product on ensuring that our people stay locked up. Now, how do they do this? How are they able to expand a prison system from a little over 37,000 prisoners by 800%? How was they able to do that in the course of 10 years? That's how long it took. Just in the last 5 years, from 2011 to now, the last decade, the price of incarceration has rose by $57,000 per prison. How are they able to do that? They ain't spending no more money on us. Inflation ain't rose that high. The way they're able to do that is they control the political, social, and in many cases, the media aspects of the state that we live in. California is just a plumb line. This is occurring all over the country. So the question becomes, how do they commoditize a human? How do you take a person and turn them into shadow? The way they do it is they criminalize your community. The doorway between the modern-day slave and the brother and sister from our community is arrest, conviction, imprisonment. That's the doorway. It's criminalization. This is only possible if our people do not have necessary resources to survive, to live, to thrive, to prosper at their disposal. Currently, we don't. This was the purpose of the Autonomous Infrastructure Mission. The aim was specifically designed to empower our people to develop their own infrastructure. where we don't have to depend on them for nothing. We develop our own forms of employment, the closed-circuit economic initiative. We feed ourselves through the sustainable agricultural commune. We educate ourselves through the New African Math and Science Center initiative. We ensure that we protect ourselves through both the Secure Communities Mandate and the Community Safe Zone initiative. We ensure that our children are developed to serve their community and not murder each other through the Youth Community Action Program. These initiatives are interconnected, and together they form our own autonomous infrastructure. We don't have to depend on these folks for nothing. The blueprint exists. We need to do nothing but pick it up and implement it.
Yes, sir. I'm here with you, comrade.
Got any questions?
Mr. Conrad. My question is, if an individual wanted to sign, how do an individual go about signing their petition?
You can go to change.org right now and sign a Community Release Board petition, Community Release Board campaign petition. Just type in Amendment 13th Community Release Board campaign petition. It'll come right up. There's also links all over social media, both Instagram, Facebook, and Messenger.
It's important to get the paper petition so you can go door to door in your community and get copies to the people.
Exactly. If you're serious about seeing CRB implemented in your community, PDF is available. You need to do nothing but download it, print it out, carry it around, and get signatures door to door.
And check this out. We understand that this is a protracted process. We understand it. We know that it ain't going to happen overnight. We know it ain't going to happen in our time. But the thing is to start the contradiction now, to challenge that, to give them opposition and challenge that so you get the people involved to fight for it. And 5, 10, 15 years from now, it'll be in place. But the fight has to start now, and the CRB is where the fight going to start.
True indeed. You know, it's always, they're starting somewhere to get the ball rolling. At this time, open up the line to a couple of callers. If you have a question, statement, if you want to make an announcement, please press 1 or open your line. At this time, you have any question, statement, or announcement, you want to talk to the guest, please press 1 at this time. Okay.
I hear you, so you answer.
Okay, 901-480, your line is open. You have a question, comment, statement, please do so. Your line is open, 901-480.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I'm right here.
901-480, your line is open. Go ahead. You have any questions, comments, statements, or announcements? Your line is open.
Peace and power. I apologize. I had muted my phone. How y'all doing tonight? This is Melly Queen. How y'all doing? I have enjoyed
Melly
this
Queen.
Show.
What's
doing
up?
Good.
How
you doing?
What's up?
How you doing? I love it. I love everything you were talking about. You know, I love it. Thank you.
Right.
Always coming real. Always coming real. You know, I miss you now.
You know. Well, the queen.
How you doing?
You know. Oh, you know, can't stop, won't stop. You know that.
Always.
You know,
always.
To the womb, to the
always.
Tomb.
Always,
the thing is that too often we water down the truth, and that only do us a disservice, right? We have to speak the truth to the people because we're obligated to the people. As revolutionaries, we're obligated to tell the truth, you know, serve them the truth, because that's going to aid us to the truth. And if we don't tell the truth and give it to them raw and uncut, we're going to continue to be on this plantation.
I totally agree with you. I totally agree. I say, you know, I wanted to speak. I have enjoyed this show tonight. And you owe me one. You know that.
I know.
All right.
I got you.
Okay. I hear you. Go ahead.
Melly Queen ain't gonna stay on. Melly Queen gonna stay on you now. She stay on people now.
I know.
I mean,
the queen of Chicago. The queen got that spirit of she got that spirit of family hammer, man. She gonna put that press on you, man.
You know. I got it.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, see.
Yes, sir. We appreciate you calling in, Sister Melly Queen.
Okay.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Brother Roman.
Yes, ma'am. You work.
And the thing is, man, we have to, like when we say concrete knowledge of the concrete conditions, when we say concrete knowledge of the concrete conditions, we're talking about the truth of an issue. A concrete knowledge means that you provide an honest assessment of the conditions on the ground. Concrete conditions is the concrete conditions, the reality. It's something that you can feel, touch, and see. You know, not metaphysics, but you can see it. We live in poverty. The poverty in our community is orchestrated by our government. That is established. It's also established that we must respond accordingly. If nothing's going to change. We can see it all day. We understand the facts. The fact is where we at now because of this racist society, this racist, fascist, sexist government. We understand that. Now what do we do? That concrete analysis also required that we provide the institution that is necessary to resist this, to serve our people and serve our community. Can't get around it. Anything less than that is reformism. And reformism is in support of fascism. Can't get around it.
Yes, sir.
You playing with the game. You ain't talking about independence. You playing with the game. You ain't talking about building institutions. That is reformism. That's not true freedom. You cannot free your people by passing out a grocery bag. You free them by controlling the product, the roots of the. I'm saying you have to own the land and develop your own Department of Agriculture to provide our people. You have to create your own water plants. You have to create your own education.
Yes,
that's
sir.
The only way you're going to be freed of. Anything less than that is reformism.
Parts out. We got another call to write. We'll be lying. Hold up.
All right.
562-212, your line is open. You got any questions, comments, statements, or now please do so this time. Your line is open. 562-212. Go ahead. Your line is open. Go ahead.
Okay, I have the mic off. Excuse me. Greetings, Free the Land. Grateful to hear your talk and speak. How you all doing?
You know, case that won't
well,
stop.
Mm-hmm. I was just glad to hear you guys speak a little about sovereignty without even saying that word, speaking on responsibility and being aware of what's ahead of us that we have to do.
Yeah, because and that's the key is like we have to develop a blueprint and get people to understand that in order for us to be completely liberated, we have to establish our sovereign rights. But it's going to take place in stages. You know, it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to happen in the next 10, 15 years. But it must be a blueprint for every generation to build from. Right now we have a small blueprint, but it's our inability to get that blueprint to the people, you know. We've been around since 1968, and most people in California have never heard of a New African Independence Movement. I've never heard of a Club of New Africa. I've never heard of it. That's on us. They don't know nobody else but us. Our inability to get the information to the people and get them to understand how important this is. Each generation play a role in that process, you know, and we have to utilize these platforms like that to teach our people. You know, but also in that process, teaching them anything less than that, you contributing towards your own oppression. I trip on this here. Morgan Freeman made a statement where he said, because he was asked, do race play a role in economic prosperity? He said, no. And he said, the fact that I am here is a case example to show that race doesn't play a role in economic prosperity. Now, my whole thing, I said, wait a minute, numbnut. You have to understand the system of capitalism. You got to understand that capitalism is a sophisticated system. And I give you this example. If I choke you out every day, you won't continue to fight me every day. You know you ain't free. But if I release that chokehold and allow you to do certain things, you're going to believe that you're free. And being that you believe that you're free and you're not knowing that you're really not free, I have more control over you because you will serve me.
But now if I keep on choking you and kicking your butt, it's no different when the United States went from chattel slavery to psychological slavery when the Industrial Revolution took place. Our people came off the plantation, they thought it was free. Now, because they have sophisticated the system of enslavement, well, we don't need the plantation no more. We got the plantation in your brain. We have the shackles in your head. You won't act like a slave no matter what. You feel what I'm saying? So that's what people need to understand. Yeah. Morgan Freeman is a clear example of a slave, you know, in the service of, for him to say, just another example. They got a college, a historical so-called black college, who said that they're going to accept 50 to 100 Ukrainian students for free. But yet you got new African students in this country that are struggling with tuition, that's struggling to fight to get a college degree, but I'm going to introduce, hey, you guys come on over here, Ukrainians, because you're getting your ass kicked over there. Come on over here, and I'm going to give you some faces that can be given to our people. You know, this is the silly shit here, you know, but only Negroes will do some crap like that. I'm going to forget about my students over here. I'm going to forget about my new African students here. I'm going to go all the way across the water and say, yeah, come on here. I'm going to give you these empty 50 seats. Ain't no empty seats. You got students at their college that are struggling.
Yeah, it's not the first time.
But only a Negro. Exactly.
First time they've done that. Call in backup.
Exactly.
European countries. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, but only Negroes, you know, we like, cool, man. And then this system is whooping the bullshit out of us because the things we do and the things how we think, you know, it's no different when you have people who were told in the struggle on the front line that were totally dismissed what's going on in the community. But I tell a brother and sister, step outside your front door. You tell me what you see. Tell me what you see. Just the other day down here, these brothers shot at a playground where kids is at. But no, we ain't going to talk about that. We're going to talk about, man, they brought the guns in. Okay, the white folks brought the gun in. But who just shot that little kid right there? Who just murdered that little 9-year-old girl? They didn't do it. You did. You did it with the gun that they gave you. You working with them then. Because you got a gun pointed at a playground. You know it's a playground. Yep. It's not invisible. You know it's a playground where our kids play at.
All
and you shot it up.
Fear. Uh-huh. And what their responsibility is in that. Yeah.
Yes, you know,
that's the lesson.
And that's what it is. And the thing is, I understand you just can't confront no street crew. I understand that. It's how we do it. It's the approach. I understand that you can't just go out there. You can't do that. You'll get dropped. What I'm saying is there's approach. There's a right way to do it. You know, you're going to do it without having direct confrontation. You know, the one example I told this one sister, she was saying, well, there's a lot of gang violence out here, and they're not listening. I said, check this out. If you got a hardcore gang member, I'm not going to try to convince him. What I'm going to do, I'm going to go to his family. Let's just, for example, say you got a son or a daughter. That's who I'm going to go after. I create programs that will benefit his son. I create programs that will benefit his daughter. Then his mother might be struggling. I'm going to go to her and create programs to aid and assist her so she can have a better life. Now, when that guy see that, no matter how hard he is, he see these programs that are beneficial to his kids. You're going to see that program beneficial to his mother. And he's a hardcore gang member. He's going to make sure the other members in that community that don't harm those programs to protect and defend that program. That's the start. Now you got his attention. See, so there's many different ways. There's many different ways to reach these gang members. You know, and a lot of times people say, well, I ain't got an idea, so it can't work. Who the hell is you? Because you can't see it, doesn't mean everybody else got to be blind. Don't impose your blindness on us if you ain't got the vision to see through the wall.
Yeah.
Because like, just like when I say, well, I can't see behind that door. I'm going to say, hey, comrade, help me see behind that door because I know you can see behind the door. I'm not going to say I can't see behind the door, so therefore nothing's behind it. If there's nothing behind it, where is the door there for then? It's something on the other side of that door. I just don't know.
Yeah.
But there are people more qualified that can tell me what's behind that door. And that's why I try to tell people, you got a lot of people in the movement think because they don't have a clue to what's going on, no one else can figure it out. Like, who in the hell is you?
Yeah, they're more
vision.
That's
when you start thinking with your ego.
Yeah. We
have some more callers, too, that want to ask a question as well, Elders.
Good to hear.
Okay.
Appreciate it. Take care, brother. Free to land.
You know that.
Okay, well, I mean, yes, sir.
That's it.
Okay. Yeah, that's Mama Shakari.
Yeah, that's Mama Shakari, yeah.
Okay. I'm open the next line up. Line 929-446. Your line is open. You have any question, comment, or statement announcement? Please use the time. 929-446. Your line is open.
Land, say the land.
Pardon
me, that's her. Go ahead.
This is Sister Coco. I just wanted to come on real quick and say thank you for a lot that you shared tonight. I definitely took a lot away. Just thinking about, how do we think about eradicating that criminal mentality within our communities? More specifically, thinking about our children and education and how those foundations are really important. Something that I think about a lot. And and then also just thinking a lot about that. How do we lead? Through principle and not a lot of these personalities. And just like really identifying that, because I think that, a lot of times where we get caught up, right, and I guess that's the style of organizing, right, that we get caught up around people. I think just really being conscious about my principles, I think helped to identify what doesn't fit and what's not, what's not working.
Yeah.
And I think if we, really think about that more often, we could lead ourselves to the place that we're trying to get and be authentic, right? I think that's important. So just some ideas that I caught.
And one thing too, Sis, like the criminal mentality can be eradicated. It can be. When Malcolm made his change, remember Malcolm was a thug and a gangster. George Jackson was a thug and a gangster. Munchie Carter was a thug and a gangster. So people can't tell me that we cannot make that transition and transformation, because there's our living, breathing example of that. You see what I'm saying? There's a blueprint for that, inside and outside, so it can be done. The thing is, do we have the will to do it? We have the George Jackson University as well as the Marcus Garvey Study Group, right? It's right there for you to support. It's been around 20 years, The radio station been around like 9 years. So it's not like we don't have the tools at our disposal, right? It's just our lack of support. But also, I say this here, as a revolutionary, I take responsibility for it, because I have to first find the language that will allow me to reach the people that they can understand. I rarely blame the people, because as a revolutionary, it's my job, it's my obligation to show them that this is important, that this is the way. If I can't do it, then it's up to another comrade that can do it. But we can't blame them for it. Because at one time we were dumb, deaf, and blind as well until somebody awakened us. But then we gave up on it. So we got to continue to try, And we have to use these platforms, but we have to be boots on the ground as well to show that we can do this and show examples that this individual used to be a drug dealer. This individual used to be a gangbanger, but look at them now. They contribute towards the revolution. So you can't eradicate it. And remember this here, too. That criminal mindset, that don't belong to us. That's Eurocentric base. That's not ours. But what we've done, we have adapted to this mentality as a survival mechanism, living in a society that have deliberately impoverished us, so we have adapted to this mentality. And that's what our young people need to understand. That mindset don't belong to us. That mentality don't belong to us. And we have the intellectual empowerment to do things in terms of create our own businesses. They're going to serve in the interest of our community, create an environment that is healthy, not an environment that is self-destructive. Bomani?
Yes, sir. I'm here, comrade. I'm here. I'm listening.
Okay.
I'm here.
Now, I was done, Sister Coco. I was done.
I appreciate your response. I definitely agree with you on that. I definitely think we do have to find the language, right, to communicate with people in our communities. I was just actually talking about that earlier. But sometimes we jump into these texts and these books and we think that we have to just, reiterate what's in them, but we have to kind of, as people who can interpret these texts, be able to read them and then be able to translate that to the community through action and through I agree with you on a lot of what you said, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. This is it.
Okay. appreciate you calling in, Sister Coco. We appreciate you calling in. Okay, let me see right quick. I think we got another caller right quick. Let me see right quick. I think we got another caller. 614-285. You have any question, comment, statement, your line open at your time. 614-285. You have any question, comment, statement, please just wait at the time your line is open.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Okay. This is Elder Mama Kandi.
Oh, Mama Kandi.
How you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing all right, Mama Kandi. How you doing?
It's good to hear your voice.
Okay. It's good to hear your voice.
Thank you. I want to say to you that, one, you bring back a lot of memories for me. Of course, you know that already, especially when you spoke about 1968. All I could do was smile. You honor three ancestors specifically for me. You honor Amos Wilson, who said the mental condition of our people is schizophrenic. You honor Francis Cress Welsing, who said our people were psychopathically racial in our behavior. And you honor Dr. Bobby E. Wright, who said that we suffer from menticide. So it seems clear to me that when we repair the mental damage of our people, everything else will follow.
No question.
You honor that in everything that you said this evening and that you constantly talk about for all the years I've known you. And that's been a really long time. People can barely hold the relationship down for a couple of years, and we go back, what, 30, 40, maybe even a little more. So I'm humbled and grateful that you still swinging, and I'm still swinging.
Oh,
it's
to the grave, my son. To the grave.
Hit, you know? But I swing at. But every now and then I get a good one.
You know? Right. Yes, you do.
Yeah.
You know. And that's one thing people understand, that the first battlefield is within, not outside. The primary battlefield is in the minds of in the hearts of our people. You know, because what we do then going to determine what we do outside of that. And a lot of our people understand that the primary battles and primary struggle is within us. We have to overcome that struggle. And once we overcome that struggle, we determine, dictate how we fight that other struggle. And a lot of people don't understand that. They don't understand menicide. They don't understand that in order for us to deal with the outer world, we have to deal with that inner world. Because they got our ass whipped on that too.
First and foremost. I've been thinking about, and I mean, I want people to think about it and even disagree with me. I'm okay with that too. Come up with a better idea than the one I came up with. For example, we talk about how our people are dying either at the hands of one another or the hands of the white cops. So for me, it seems pretty simple. We find out, we send in our spies as students to places like MIT, find out about these bulletproof clothing from head to toe, hats, coats, dresses, pants, you know, socks, shoes, all that stuff bulletproof. That's one solution to us just being arbitrarily shot. Another is all these white people who claim they love black people,
They should show up at black people's door every day and surround them and let them be the target. They love us so much and, you know, want us to integrate. And I don't, like I said, I don't care if you don't like my ideas. Come up with better ones. But come up with something.
Yeah. And the thing is this here, right? No one single idea. So we have to utilize every means at our disposal. That's one idea. You know what I'm saying? That can be implemented. So, I mean, we can't, you know, sometimes people try to place value on their own ideal and ignore everybody else. Every ideal that is specifically designed to aid and assist us, maybe in our protection, defense, or building, is a good idea, you know? And if we dealing with a country or society that is very violent towards us, those things don't come in handy. Those things that we must have at our disposal anyway. In fact, three, four, 5 weeks ago, I sent Bomani and some other comrades an article. As a matter of fact, it was a website that sell pants and vests and shirts that are bulletproof.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because those things are required. Mm-hmm. They're gonna be. All we have to do is look around you. Look around us. That reality is real. And like one of the things that we have done, we have watched. Especially my comrade Ashima, he has studied the new weapons that are being developed by these white companies. Our people ain't got a clue to the type of weapons that these folks are developing, and the white supremacist movement, the white nationalist movement, have direct access to those weapons. This is not propaganda. Okay. This is not manufactured. This is real. They got weapons that you can't even imagine, and yet we run around here untrained, uneducated, and we use our ego. Shooting a gun sideways is not going to be the armed force. And that's what
I don't know.
We're not prepared.
I don't know if it's still true. It probably is. A few years ago, I was notified that in Tennessee, brothers and sisters, it's illegal for them to have a bulletproof vest. They're not allowed
in most
to protect
cases
themselves. How crazy is that? You
in
know?
Most states, it is illegal. Yeah.
Yeah. It makes sense. White genetic survival. They can't have us being able to survive, and they're trying to survive, too. So it's one or the other. I vote for us. Thank you for taking the time thank you for taking the time to share a few moments. And go down memory lane.
No problem. No problem, Mama Condi.
Thanks, Bomani.
You're welcome. We appreciate it, Mama Condi. Hey, Mama Condi. Okay. Yeah, comrade. We got like 15 minutes left, man. One thing I wanted to ask you right before we got the time. In regards to the what exactly is the significance of Conrad George to the overall movement? Because a lot of people think he's just significant to the prison movement, right? People in prison. But I look at the prison movement as an extension of the overall movement, right? So what's your thoughts on that in regards to what people be saying? You know,
and this is the thing it's ridiculous, right? The prison industrial slave complex is not on another planet. It's a direct manifestation of a fascist, capitalistic, imperialist society. This is the creation of theirs. This is a balance, so it's not separate. So when you enter these prison gates, you're not going to another planet. This is the same issues. The same issues here exist out there. That's why when the dragon says this here is only a micro production of its outside creation. That's macro. This is micro. It's the same battlefield. So when you look at Comrade George, it has nothing to do with this battlefield. George extended the overall struggle. Just like when we fight, we ain't fighting the prison struggle. We fighting the revolutionary struggle. This is just our battlefield. And Comrade George made that clear. Comrade George said, we're going to transform these prisons to revolutionary training camps and send revolutionaries to the streets, to the outer battle. You know, and that's what we have to understand. George was a revolutionary, not a prison rights activist.
He was a revolutionary. Just so happened to be in prison. This is a battlefield. And why that's significant is this here. And I tell people this. I remember I had a dialogue. I'm not going to say who it was because she's well known. I don't really remember, but mine, we used to have a newsletter called New African Political Prisoners, right? Newsletter. And certain individual was not included in the newsletter because they became political while in prison. I said, wait a minute. You say Comrade George is a political prisoner, right? Yeah. He was a thug when he first came to prison. He didn't come to prison for political ideas and beliefs. So why you include him but exclude those other individuals? Understand something. This is a battlefield. This is part of the struggle. So you have a brother or sister in these prisons who's part of a movement that's fighting against racial oppression and is being persecuted as a direct result. They are a political prisoner. If they're part of the armed struggle in prison, they are a POW. They're being persecuted. If they're placed in isolation, it's no different if you're on the street and you're fighting against the government. They put you in jail. You are being imprisoned because of your political beliefs. If you are in the prison industrial slave complex and you are placed in solitary confinement isolation solely because of your political beliefs and ideas, you are a political prisoner. You can't get around that. In other countries, they do the same thing. Ireland, all the mothers, only here. We have allowed others to dictate to us what is and what is not a political prisoner, and we ride with that. But there's a contradiction because no one disputes the fact that Comrade George is a political prisoner. Well, are you forgetting Comrade George came as a thug, a gangster? His first 2-3 years, he was a gangster in prison. The Wolf Pack, they were not revolutionaries. You know? So even if you study George writing and George on writing, you read his book, not just Prisoner, but Blood in My Eyes, it's beyond prison. He's fighting the overall struggle. Just like no matter what we're doing in here, we fight the overall struggle. We're not isolated from the prison, but this is where we at. We have to address these concrete conditions. We understand that there's a connection between this and that out there, like Comrade George did, like Bunchy Carter did. You know, the Black Dragon, Jeff Guitar Golden understood that. You know, we understand that there's a connection. It's not separate. This is just another battlefield. And this is the battlefield that we're on. You know, and if you read Comrade George writing, especially Blood in My Eyes, it clearly, when George talked about the non-military infrastructure, what do you think George talking about? You see what I'm saying? George talking about building independent institutions in the community that are going to serve the needs of our community once we separate from the government. That's what George speaking about. And remember, George wrote those writings back in the late 60s. They were just published after he was assassinated. So a lot of George's ideals relate to the overall revolution. It's not isolated in no prison. It's no different when you look at the Nation of Islam. A lot of their ideals was beyond, especially in the 60s and 70s, because it was more revolutionary than in prison. It goes beyond just a prison. This was just one battlefield. This was an opportunity for us to reach these brothers and sisters here and train them, reorientate them, reindoctrinate them, and send them back to the streets. But let me say this here, and a lot of people don't know. At one time, our collective, the leadership of a collective was never meant to go out of prison, would get out. It was all meant to stay right here and create an environment that we can train and educate brothers and sisters and send them to the streets in the service of the community. And that's how I was 30, 40 years ago. You know, to maintain a structure here that would provide an environment that would transform these brothers and sisters' minds to a criminal mind, to a revolutionary mentality. Like Comrade Qatari say, like Comrade George say, turn this into a revolutionary training camp. And with that mission, this is what we try to do, and we were sent to solitary confinement. You know, I did almost 33 years in solitary. You know, my comrade here did 20 years. Most of us did from 20 years to 50 years solely because of our political beliefs and activities. You can't tell me my comrades are not political prisoners. That's crap. You know, but then you got them individuals played as elitism where you got to have this logo. This logo make you a political prisoner. No, it don't. This logo make you a political prisoner of war. No, it don't. It's your actions and deeds and what you're fighting for and how you're being persecuted in prison make you that. So there's no separation, comrade. You know, this is just another battlefield. This is just another battlefield.
True indeed, true indeed. You know, I understand that. You know, I just want you to reiterate the people, you know, that they'll be making the old assumption, like, you know, like it's a different form of the movement, just in a different location. You know, that's all it is,
yeah.
A different location, the same movement going on, just the different circumstances and conditions. That's all it
yeah.
is, you know.
And we
you
need
know,
revolutionaries on every front. We need revolutionaries to fight on
yes,
every
sir.
Front.
Yes, sir. That's what it's about.
The same thing
that's
that exists out here exists in there.
You know?
Yeah.
True indeed. True indeed. You know, we got like 8 minutes left. You got about 8 minutes left. You can go ahead and start giving your final thoughts. So what you want to leave us with?
Yeah. I'm going to leave this here. We have the George Jackson University in conjunction with the Marcus Garvey Study Group at the disposal of the people. This is an opportunity. When you look at the situation in our community, maybe crime, gang violence, whatever, one of the solutions, I'm not saying the only solution, one of the solutions lies with the George Jackson University. But it's only effective as the people support it. If we don't support the George Jackson University, it's not going to be effective. And we can't blame no one but ourselves. Here we have an opportunity to transform this New African criminal mentality to a New African revolutionary mentality that's going to serve in the best interests of our community. We have that opportunity. We have the opportunity. And look, one thing, understand this here. This is what I think is important. We're not trying to destroy no street gang. Those are brothers and sisters. We're not trying to destroy them. We're trying to transform them to revolutionary formation that are going to serve in the best interest of our community. Because at one time, the majority of us was at one time gang members. You know? So we're not trying to destroy. Those are brothers and sisters. We're not going to work against them. We're working for them and with them. And let them understand that it's important that you guys make this transition. Be here to protect and defend the community and not destroy the community. You know, so I just want to let people understand that George Jackson University is one of the answers. That was it, Bo Money.
True indeed. Yes, sir, man. Again, I want to thank you for coming to the platform and sharing your knowledge, understand and share your experience. I want to thank you for working on committee in the past, present, and working to do in the future. I want to say long live the resistance. Long live the gorilla, long live the dragon, long live the independent movement. If you got any close comrades, associates, loved ones, or friends, or relatives behind enemy line, you look at the Georgia University, which is www.georgejacksonuniversity.com. You know, and I'll remember that. Education is for liberation, and also that history is a weapon. It can be a weapon against us, and a weapon that we can use to overcome our oppression, and also that we have the power and the ability to make things happen if we unite and become one. Free the land,
yeah.
Long live the resistance.
Free the land.
Vitamin S, sir.